MSO News, giving voice to the North Shore. This is North Shore Today for Friday, August 2, 2024, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber. Moynihan Lumber supporting local news coverage in communities on the North Shore. I'm Rick Moore. Man killed by train in Beverly. Gloucester police officer praised for actions at house fire. Parental rights bill passed. Afternoon clouds, high mid-80s, high tide Gloucester Harbor, 10:35 a.m. and 10:42 p.m. Back in 64 seconds with North Shore Today News.
Hey everybody, Dom Nicastro here, host of the North Shore Sports Desk and Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. On the North Shore Sports Desk this week, August 1st, Peyton DiBiasio, Saugus girls basketball player, three sports standout, amazing athlete, telling us about her AAU summer. We got Joe McConnell, sports reporter, talking about Marblehead's new AD and Saugus's new AD, among other things. And on the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, we got Kendall Toth, Phillips Andover standout, who was a Moynihan Lumber student athlete of the month. Tune in Thursday morning on MSONewsSports.com.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Yes, we are a full-service lumber yard, but we also offer doors and windows and kitchen cabinets. Please visit us in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Taparo Capital Management. It's time to craft your retirement plan. Click on the Taparo banner at the top right of our website and begin creating your winning game plan.
The Salem News is reporting that a man was struck and killed by a train in Beverly on Wednesday night. MBTA Transit Police said the man was intentionally trespassing on the right-of-way when he was struck by an MBTA commuter rail train near Pride's Crossing at about 8:25 p.m. The train was an inbound train on the Gloucester branch. The incident happened just 10 days after a Beverly man was struck by a commuter train on tracks on the Salem-Beverly line. The Essex District Attorney's Office identified that man as 31-year-old Christopher Thigpen, who died July 21 after being struck about noon by a southbound rail as he walked across the bridge between Beverly and Salem. Thigpen was walking across the turnstile, the portion of the bridge that rotates to allow boats to pass, when he was hit by the train and thrown into the water. Ethan Foreman's reporting in today's Gloucester Times. An off-duty Gloucester police officer is being recognized as going above and beyond for helping to save an 82-year-old man whose garage at 20 Marina Drive on Wednesday went up in flames. Firefighters, with help from Rockport crews, quickly extinguished the blaze in the attached garage, and the man was taken by Beauport Ambulance to Beverly Hospital. Also taken to the hospital was Officer Brian Crowley, who was off-duty and lived next door to the two-story single-family home where the blaze broke out around 10:40 a.m. Off-duty Officer Crowley went above and beyond and placed his personal safety at risk to save the life of his neighbor during a house fire, according to Street Supervisor Sergeant Joseph Balbo, in recognizing Crowley. You can read the complete story by Ethan Foreman in today's Gloucester Times. That fire resulted in a lot of smoke damage to the home. Fire Chief Eric Smith explains what some of the challenges the homeowners now have to face.
So there's probably going to be pretty extensive, you know, smoke damage to the home, which means you're talking going in and cleaning everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any carpeting, any material, cloth things that were out and exposed, not in drawers or contained, it may be able to be washed and put back in place, but often the case is that it just ends up having to be replaced. So you're talking painting walls. You may need to not only clean them, you might need to seal them and then paint them, you know. And so because this odor of the smoke is difficult to get rid of, you know. Think about any time you've been out barbecuing or sitting around a campfire or something, you come in away from that source of smoke, of which you weren't even standing directly in typically,
mm-hmm.
right? But you smell of it, and you'll smell of it for days. My folks, every time we have a working fire like this and we're in the smoke, and you know, people are permeated with it and they smell of that smoke for days. You know, when back long ago when I used to get to drag hoses into house fires and whatnot, you know, my wife would smell smoke in my hair for 3, 4, 5 days after a fire, because it permeates that well, and we all have had that experience, yeah, to one degree or another. So same for the inside of the house.
Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith. State House reporter Christian Wade is reporting that gay and lesbian couples seeking to have children in Massachusetts will have parental rights under a bill awaiting Governor Mara Healey's signature. The bipartisan proposal, approved by the state legislature on the final day of formal sessions, guarantees equality in parental rights regardless of gender, marital status, or the circumstance of birth. Healey is expected to sign the bill into law. Paul Layton of the Salem News recently reported on the Blueberry Hills nursing home in Beverly that failed a state board of health inspection in the past fall. Cited for abuse, the nursing home has since come back into compliance, according to reporter Layton.
It's been cited for abuse by the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and so what that means is that there's a website where you can compare nursing homes run by the federal government, the Medicare and Medicaid centers, and when a nursing home gets that distinction, they actually put an icon of a red hand on the nursing home to alert people to this. That's what caught my attention. And so, you know, unfortunately, I've written a lot of stories over the years about nursing homes that have had problems during these inspections. It's pretty common, to be honest with you. And I've gotten to the point where I don't write a story until it reaches this level of the literally a red hand on the telling you to stop, basically, and look at what's going on in this nursing home. So state inspectors come in every so often in these nursing homes and check out what's going on. And they found a lot of problems at Blueberry Hill in terms of how they were caring for patients and, patients being neglected and to the point where they label it as abuse. I think the abuse in this case is through neglect and the impact it's had on some of these residents, and the conditions in the nursing home weren't the best in terms of the handling of food and, other conditions in there. So the state says they've since come back into compliance. So that's a good thing, but it's an ongoing problem at nursing homes. And I feel badly sometimes I write these stories and it's all true and people should know, but these nursing homes are also really understaffed. This report said that they were understaffed for, I forget the numbers, 200 out of the last 230 days. It just aren't enough people. And it goes into this bigger problem I think we've talked about before, where a lot of these nursing homes are owned by companies that are for-profit companies. They're not local, you have to be local. And, are they putting enough money into these nursing homes? And are they hiring enough staff? And are they paying enough? So these are the problems that result, unfortunately.
At Salem News reporter Paul Layton. Stephen Haggins writing in today's Gloucester Times, mass transit has arrived in Essex. The Cape Ann Transportation Authority, CATA, recently introduced a new bus line to Essex, which will connect with other buses in Gloucester. The West Gloucester route was extended to Essex last month and now provides service on Route 133 over the Essex River Causeway to the Essex Housing Authority on Shebaco Terrace, in the area near Shepherd Memorial Park off Martin Street. CATA officials also have added additional morning and afternoon trips on the Business Express bus and Lanesville routes in Gloucester. Officials at CATA say the effort is aimed at having more consistent service. And Sophia Harris on itemlive.com is reporting that Governor Mara Healey's administration enacted a $58 billion budget for fiscal year 2025, including $8.1 million in investments for Marblehead, ranging from Chapter 70 education funding and local aid to one-time earmarks supporting historical heritage. Red Sox face the Rangers tonight in Texas. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
Hey there, it's Dom Nicastro from the North Shore Sports Desk and Merrimack Valley Sports Desk, my two podcasts on MSONewsSports.com. I've been covering local sports since 1998, and I'm thrilled to bring you interviews with the amazing student athletes, coaches, and everyone in between who make our corner of Massachusetts just a little better place. Catch new episodes every Thursday morning on msonewsports.com. Follow me at Dom Sports Desk for the latest updates and find our shows right on the homepage at msonewsports.com.
This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, and talking now with the Gloucester Fire Chief, Eric Smith. Chief, welcome back, and I hope you either have had a good vacation or are going on a good vacation soon.
Yeah, a little of each of that. So we had a wedding to attend, so we kind of spun that into a couple days away and went to that event, which turned out well. And now we're looking forward to maybe getting in a couple more days on vacation before the summer season wanes. I see the sunlight is already, you know, we've already passed the peak and we're on the way down. It's getting darker a little earlier and earlier, which is always a sad ending to summer for us.
Yeah, well, like Yogi used to say, it gets late earlier now, so, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. Chief, on a serious note, a very dangerous situation on Marina Drive yesterday in Gloucester. Tell me a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, so yesterday, 20 Marina Drive, we had a fire that started in the garage of that residential home. The homeowner was there at the time, and it sounds like in his life he's been a professional welder and still does that now to this day, and was doing some welding operations on a project, a home project that he has. And it appears, and what we can gather from the discussions our fire prevention officer had with him was that, you know, he was using some torches earlier in the day, and it's kind of an assumption at this point without, you know, because all the evidence is burned up because the garage burned up significantly, but some of the gases that he uses for cutting and torch operations apparently started to leak, that they were left, you know, the valves were left in the on position as he was still working. And sometimes the valves and controls to these things, depending on how you're using them, manipulating them, they'll kind of come loose. So a bit of an assumption on our part because there's no way to kind of prove or disprove it. But what occurred is while he was doing some other welding, which is creating obviously arcs and sparks while you're using a welder with electricity, that there was a flash fire that occurred and burned back into the storage area for these gas bottles and got other combustibles burning in the process. And the owner was unable to extinguish it himself and was then, evacuated out of the garage. It sounds like one of our police officers might actually live right there nearby and heard one of the bottles, you know, released, which creates kind of an explosion sound, right? So when a pressure vessel, a gas bottle, propane tank, a spray can of hairspray or paint or what have you, when that metal container gets hot enough, it becomes weak and the pressure inside can make it fail. And when that happens, you're going to get a loud pop. If the contents are flammable or can aid in the combustion process, like oxygen doesn't burn itself, but it helps the burning process, right? Without oxygen, you won't get a fire. So when those release, and he had some of all of that in that garage, when those start to release, you're going to get that loud pop, you're going to get a fireball, and obviously, depending on what the contents are, they're going to add to the fuel load for a period of time until they burn up. But most of it, if it's in a liquid or gas state, most of what he had was in a gas state, is going to burn up pretty quickly. But it's going to burn impressively until that fuel is either all used up or we extinguish it. So once that occurred, you know, there was enough noise and some smoke that got people's attention, and he got out of the garage across the street. You know, we arrived a few minutes after the call for the fire, which by the time there was an actual call, that fire was well involved in the garage. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a delayed notice whilst, you know, the owner tried to manage the fire quickly, which is typical of welding operations. I mean, you create arcs and sparks, they get small little spot fires. It's just part of what is typically done. The issue was the failure of some of the other equipment that led to a larger issue and a larger problem that then could be managed by, you know, someone at home, mm-hmm. even with the training and the experience in it. So that is kind of our assumptions. Based on pretty good information and knowledge of how these things work as to why the fire occurred. And then obviously the fire itself was fairly extensive. So the property has a detached garage that abuts the kitchen portion of the home. And there is several additions on the home. So the, So the garage burned up completely on the interior, and where fire could get out of that compartment, out the front door of the garage that was open, out the window openings that failed or were open. Obviously, there's additional damage that is on the exterior of the main home, as well as the fire got into the wall that separates the garage from the home.
Mm.
And so fortunately, the fire actually didn't get inside the home and start any fire in there. It was real close. You know, the plaster was cracked, and we were not that far away from that fire making its way through that wall into the kitchen, and now we've got a full-on house involved, the residential living space of this property burning as well. Fortunately, our folks got there real quick. They pulled off a couple of large diameter lines to flow a lot of water quickly because it was a lot of fire. So the more fire you have, the more water you need or extinguishing agent to contain it, control it, and put it out. So they hit that thing as hard as they could with hand lines and did the job very quickly and knocked it down. Fortunately, the homeowner, or I should say unfortunately, the homeowner did suffer potentially some smoke inhalation. It doesn't sound like he had any burns or thermal-type injuries, and I haven't heard what the outcome of that was because we handed the patient off to Beauport, who covers us and backs us up at fire events. Given our level of staffing, even though we're the primary ambulance in town, when we initially arrive, folks are in both modes, fire rescue and to do the EMS treatment. But we will do the initial treatment and then hand that patient off to the ambulance that is automatically called to respond along with us. So that system worked out well. Beauport was able to get us, you know, not only the one truck that is kind of our standard in our agreement with them and in our contract, but they actually sent us two, which was awesome because they were able to take care of him immediately, get him transported, and still maintain a second ambulance at the scene. So things went pretty well. Got a quick knockdown on the fire. Obviously, a lot of damage to the structure and whatnot, so it just takes an extensive amount of time to overhaul that to make sure that there's no hidden fire, that all the fire is out, and that, you know, there's no hot spots left. So it took far more time ensuring the fire was completely out than it did to actually get there, hit the body of the fire, and knock it down and get it under control.
Well, I know in the press release it mentioned smoke damage, and that's something I know that was involved at City Hall. It was a small fire at City Hall in the not-too-distant past, a very small fire, and the results were crazy in terms of damage to the building. So explain smoke damage to me, Chief, and how this house may recover from that.
Yeah, so I never went interior into the home. They were doing way too much work near any of the entrances, and the positioning of the home was just not appropriate for me to get in their way and go in there. So subsequently, talking to the deputy and our inspector who were in the home, it sounds like they got some smoke damage, but the difference in most situations for residential versus like what we had at City Hall commercially is the way the structures are partitioned, you tend to get less movement of smoke causing as much damage, but it can be extensive. I would not going in and seeing exactly the extent and level of smoke damage. It sounds like it is our typical thing that we see with like outside fires or attached garage fires that, you know, some of it, the smoke gets in the building. And so that smoke's going to travel throughout the building, right? And every wall that it gets near, it's going to adhere to. All the stuff in the house, all the smoke, the soot is going to stick to. It's very sticky, very greasy, dirty smoke, especially from, you know, a fire in a garage space or other storage space where there's all sorts of different chemicals and supplies of a nature where they're petroleum-based and all sorts of a mix of what, you know, what we all have in our garages,
mm-hmm.
paints and fuels. And in this case, you know, a lot of automotive restoration stuff. So they did have a kit car out in front of the house that was a fiberglass, you know, with a cover on it that unfortunately was close enough to the front of the garage that the back of the car caught fire and that was burning as well. So all of that led to producing a lot of smoke. So there's probably going to be pretty extensive, you know, smoke damage to the home, which means you're talking going in and cleaning everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any carpeting, any material, cloth things that were out and exposed, not in drawers or contained, it may be able to be washed and put back in place, but often the case is that it just ends up having to be replaced. So you're talking painting walls, you may need to not only clean them, you might need to seal them and then paint them, you know. And so because this odor of the smoke is difficult to get rid of, you know. Think about any time you've been out barbecuing or sitting around a campfire or something, you come in away from that source of smoke, of which you weren't even standing directly in typically,
mm-hmm.
right? But you smell of it, and you'll smell of it for days. My folks, every time we have a working fire like this and we're in the smoke, and you know, people are permeated with it and they smell of that smoke for days. You know, when back long ago when I used to get to drag hoses into house fires and whatnot, you know, my wife would smell smoke in my hair for 3, 4, 5 days after a fire, because it permeates that well, and we all have had that experience, yeah, to one degree or another. So same for the inside of the house. You know, imagine you got a big barbecue going and the thing's smoking up and your food is burning and you're right next to a slider and you open it up and all that smoke pours in the house. The mess that you can imagine, 100-fold in many cases,
yeah,
when it's from a house fire
like that,
because it's just that more intense and that much more of a dirty, if you will, smoke.
Well, thank you for explaining that, because my naive idea was, you know, as you say, the smoke from a barbecue comes in the house, you turn some fans on, you open up the windows, and it's gone. But that's a good explanation, and I appreciate that. Chief, let me shift gears here finally. It's summertime. We haven't had a lot of rain, and that usually produces problems and warnings from the fire department. What's your assessment at this point?
Yeah, so we've been fortunate the last couple of days to get a little bit of rain, not nearly as much as I would prefer to kind of keep the woods green instead of brown. But, you know, we started to trend in that brown direction. We weren't under an official drought, but it has been something that has been predicted to have a very high likelihood of that. We will probably get into a drought condition prior to the end of summer and more of the rainy season kicking in and balancing us back out. So overall, I think we're doing well compared to some of the years that all of us experienced over the last decade with some pretty extreme drought. You know, when we had the month plus long fire burning up on Poles Hill, you know, we were in one of the most extreme droughts this area has seen in a long time. So we're not anywhere near that. However, it's still enough of a drought, and people have probably noticed, like, wow, some of my plants aren't doing so good. Some of the trees are shedding leaves oddly. And all of that contributes, right, to what can burn on the ground, but what is struggling to stay alive that could be fuel for a fire. So everywhere out on our trails and paths and the forested areas and even folks' yards, they still need to exercise some diligence and caution and apply the same rules that really should be applied all the time when you're dealing with anything that's fire or heat producing that could lead to a fire. You know, campfires, barbecues, all of that, you just need to be careful. You know, you can't, if you're out walking through the woods, you know, trying to get a little exercise in and enjoying a hike, it still boggles my mind that some folks are out there apparently smoking while they're doing something healthy and flick a cigarette and we hit a fire. It just seems diametrically opposed, but it happens. So, you know, to the folks that like to go out in the woods and have a campfire, you're not allowed to do that at all on city properties or the beaches, right? Those are restricted, so just please don't. You know, and for those that may own private properties or the private tracts of land that are there, that those things are allowed under their rules or their ownership, you know, again, exercise caution needs to be, you know, kept high. I mean, we're getting into that drought condition, and it doesn't take a lot of days in a row to really dry out the soil, right? It's hot. things evaporate when the ground gets dry and the plants are dry. Not only do we get those superficial fires that are burning what you can see, they go underground and we chase it for days. And it's just, it's brutal on the people that have to go do it. It's not so easy on the budget for the city to manage these things, right? We end up hiring people back to stay out there for as much as we can, because not only do we have an incident that just won't end, we still have to cover the rest of the city. So, you know, the required and prudent thing to do is, okay, now we gotta hire people back on overtime to staff up to handle what is occurring. So, you know, the Poles Hill fire was extremely, extremely expensive during an extremely high drought time. So, we're hoping to avoid all of that by people just being responsible in the woods. And for many years, you know, I've heard the folks that say, well, close the woods, shut the woods. We've had this discussion for over a decade that is a mistake. That's not what you should be doing, right? You want folks in the woods. They should be out there exercising, enjoying the resource responsibly. And all those good citizens and residents are the eyes and ears of the fire department, that if someone else is out there doing something they shouldn't do, they see it, they report it, and we stop it from becoming a larger problem. And so, you know, definitely the adage of if you see something, say something, but also the fire prevention strategies of just be responsible, don't do the wrong thing in the wrong place, right? Pay attention, be responsible for your actions. So we also put up a website or a hub site, as it's called, for wildland fires. We went through the whole process of putting together that community wildfire protection plan for all of Cape Ann. So all four Cape Ann communities are involved in it, and the resources are there for all the residents. But it's a great site. We have it linked on the fire department's web page for everybody to go to, and it will give you all the information you want about the plan. You can read the plan start to finish. It's hundreds and hundreds of pages, fairly boring reading. But for folks that are into it, enjoy that. But the bigger takeaway from that is the advice and methods of making your home safer, right, and as safe as you can do it, and hardening your structure from fire, protecting your property, giving you some space between you and that wildland interface, to where if a fire is approaching your property, it's not going to make its way all the way up to your property, because you've cleared the ground, you've left yourself some safe space, right? And that you're doing your part to not become part of a larger problem if it's coming at you. Obviously, in the news, there's been lots of, you know, wildfires out west, which we know is typical and they're struggling with, but, you know, whole communities get put at risk out there from this. We don't tend to see that here. But individual homes and structures absolutely get put at risk if people aren't doing the right things and trying to make their home as fire safe as they can, not just inside but outside from that wildfire, you know, risk, if you live abutting the woods and areas where that, you know, wildland interface exists. So definitely recommend folks go and take a look at the website. You know, we got all kinds of good fire prevention information on there, from, you know, smoke alarms and COs, but the wildland piece is out there and is new, and is a really good resource. I'm pretty happy with how that came out. And the best part of it is that, you know, the state jumped in there to help with that, paid for everything that we got done on this with state funding through a grant for all four communities that we quarterbacked. So we did very well with that, and we're pretty happy about that. So the other added piece of it is that we'll be taking delivery of a UTV, a John Deere Gator, that will be equipped with a skid for extricating people out of the woods, as well as a fire pump and small water tank. So that's increasing our response capability out in the woods as part of this grant. So we're extremely, extremely thankful for the folks at DCR and their chief fire warden, Dave Shalino, who is the person that made that happen for us. I mean, he was the guy that made all those airdrops happen at Poles Hill for us. So he's been a great partner at the state for the city, and has really, really done a ton to push this, you know, improving the wildland interface safety for every community he can in the Commonwealth. But we've definitely got a lot of his attention, which has been excellent. So he's been a great partner.
All right, great information, a lot to digest. That's Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.